It's time for Steve Gregory, which we do on a fairly regular basis. A couple things I want to share with Steve, Steve and I are going to share with you. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Bill.
Okay, Steve, of course, has Unsolved. Unsolved is a radio program that he does on Saturday nights. We're going to do that either the end of this segment or the next segment. One of the things about Steve, which I've always found fascinating, is he is an at-large reporter. Mainly because—
Is that a fat joke?
It's about to be.
Another fat joke. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, as in not an anchor. Yes. Basically goes out and finds stories on his own for the most part, and they happen to be stories, a lot of police blotter stories because of his connection. So let's talk about what you were working on this week.
Yeah, so on Wednesday, Thursday— Tuesday, Wednesday. I'm all screwed up this week. I was invited by the United States Forest Service. They have a fire investigation team. And this is something that was very unprecedented for them because it's the first time they allowed a reporter to be embedded with their arson investigation school. And this is something fascinating because as many years as I've been covering wildfires, Colorado, Arizona, and here in California— one of the things I've always wondered is how on earth does an arson investigator walk up to a 200,000-acre wildfire after it's been completely extinguished and say, okay, that's where it started, and this is how it started. I've never understood how they do that. So I had a very unique opportunity. I was invited to go to this school that takes place once a year, and it was there's this collection of government buildings near March Air Force Base in Riverside County. So I sat through on Tuesday through the theory. I sat through all their classroom, and I sat through and listened to about all the, you know, ignition points and how they determine this and the science behind that. And it was just absolutely fascinating. And then on the second day, we went out into BLM land. It's actually a nature preserve, and burning it actually helps the kangaroo rat habitat.
I love that. Now, this is not Black Lives Matter land.
No, this is Bureau of Land Management.
Okay.
Yes, it's different. This is the original BLM.
I got it.
And so what they do is then they go out and these instructors who are all from around different parts of the state, national parks and whatnot, they light fires in these patches. And then they do different types of ignition. And then the students come out after lunch, and then they have to go over to these patches of where these burn areas are, and they have to go through finding the ignition point and the cause of the fire and the origin of the fire. I mean, it's just fascinating to watch. So I recorded the entire thing for 2 days straight, and it'll be part of a future Unsolved episode, and we're going to use it in news too. So, but for instance, campfires. Something I didn't know about campfires. Do you know what a duff layer is?
It's some kind of a sexual position.
Leave it to you. A duff layer is that that's like on top of the ground. It's a compacted layer of like pine needles and leaves. Okay. And then every season, it just keeps compacting and compacting to where you have this very large, sometimes up to 12 inches of this duff layer. Now, that's an actual source of traveling fire. I'm going to play for you now. Gonzo is this instructor that I was just riveted by all his knowledge. And he's talking about campfires and how people screw up with campfires and don't properly extinguish them.
So what will happen with some of these campfires, it'll consume the firewood that they brought. They will believe to have extinguished the campfire, but unbeknownst to them, that fire has also burned underground. And it's now burning that duff layer, and it'll travel for miles at times. And just like with water, it'll choose the path of least resistance. And unless it finds oxygen, it's going to self-extinguish itself. So at certain times, if there are pockets of oxygen, it's going to come up to breathe. And when we introduce oxygen to a red cherry, that's where the flame occurs.
A red cherry?
Red, that's what we call, if you look at a cigarette, you know, the burning portion of the cigarette paper, red cherry.
Kind of any, like an ember of any kind?
Ember of any kind.
So the takeaway right there is that the fire can travel underground for miles before it surfaces and then starts a fire somewhere else. And they have to figure out and go back to the point of origin, which could be a mile or two away.
And that is, as a matter of fact, I want to take a break and ask that question. Is you have a fire that is hundreds of thousands of acres or dozens of acres, and it spreads in all directions. Mm-hmm. How do they know how it started?
Okay.
And so, where that started?
So it doesn't matter if it's 1 acre or 100,000 acres. They approach the fires all the same way. Investigators will start on the outer perimeter of the fire and work in. And what they do is they're looking for burn pattern, spread pattern. They're looking at which direction the fire burned. You know, they're looking at foliage and grass. And they're because, remember, fire creates its own weather pattern because flame is constantly looking for oxygen, as you heard Gonzo say. And so it's sucking air, and that's causing wind, and it's causing, you know, little tornado, mini tornadoes and whatnot. So as the fire is searching for that oxygen, it's moving, and sometimes it's wind-driven or, it's slope-driven. And they'll look at the pattern it burns, and then they just keep going in and working themselves in. They do a grid pattern search, and they continue to, like a dragnet, and they go in until they get to the center of the fire, and then they work their way back out, and they start looking at behavior, fire behavior patterns. They look at if there's any kind of stain on the rock, like rocks that are down on the ground, is it stained on this side but not on this side? Is it, are the branches burned all over or just on one side? And that gives them an idea. And then they have these little colored flags. And then they put down colored flags to denote like the direction of the fire. They'll put one down where they think there's a piece of evidence. They'll put one down where there's a point of interest. And then when they're all done with putting on their flags, they take an aerial view of it or a sketch or a photo, and then they go back and they visualize it, and then they work in closer, and they literally go in and find the origin of the fire.
And they can, with specificity.
With specificity. And they have more success than not because they conceded that sometimes fires are undetermined. And Mother Nature, they say, is a tough mother. And they sometimes a lightning fire, they can tell a tree that's been hit by lightning, and they know exactly how it hit. It's fascinating. I was just like a kid in a candy store.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over. We got another one that's just as interesting.
Yeah.
And that is Unsolved Tomorrow Night. But it's taken a spin that I don't think it's ever happened before. Certainly not on this station with the interview that happened.
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah, we finally got the FBI. Finally, after 3 months.
Okay.
We got the FBI in. So tomorrow night, we're going to feature a case that happened back in September 20, 2009, the death of Kevin Robert Harris. And this is very similar to a case we highlighted in the past with the LA County Sheriff's Department, but this one also deals with a hip-hop music artist. The interesting thing about this one is this kid's 20 years old, or he's 21 at the time, and he was killed, and he had already gotten the attention of Ice-T and Britney Spears and Rihanna. He'd already sold tracks to some of the biggest rap artists already. 21 years old, already climbing up in the world and in the rap world. But one night, he was at the studio, the little studio he rented out, and another car pulled up to him and just opened fire and hit him anywhere from 10 to 20 times. And then the car drove away. And then that's it. There are people out there who know exactly who did it. They know all the circumstances behind it. And the FBI agent in charge of this case, Sean Sterley, told me that they're just this close. They just need one person to come forward. $50,000 reward. I want to play for you now a little bit of Agent Sterley. And this is an interesting exchange, and I do this to illustrate sometimes the challenges I face with investigators. So Agent Sterley and I are talking a little bit about theories and, how it happened and who's behind it, and here's how it unfolds.
Respect plays a huge yes. role in this culture.
Correct.
In this hip-hop culture, in this music culture, respect. And something as simple as disrespect can get someone killed.
Correct.
Is that a plausible theory in this case?
It is a plausible theory. Because it's happened. Speaking to investigators from LAPD, LA County Sheriff's Department homicide investigators, there've definitely been in the rap game, people just from their lyrics and their songs. If somebody feels disrespected, there ends up being a shooting or a retaliation, with violence. So there's no doubt that it was something we couldn't overlook. And I think that it's probably I think there's a probably some of that I'm trying not to give up too much.
I was going
to
say, you're having a really tough time not being able to tell me what you want to tell me.
Yeah, yeah. I know, dancing around. I apologize. Well,
let me just ask you this because we got to wrap up. So let me ask it to you this way. Are you, agent, are you closer to solving this case today than you were when you first set eyes on it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. 100%.
And that's the challenge I have with these guys. And that's one of the reasons why they don't want to talk to me.
Okay, and they can't let the information.
They're afraid I'm going to extract something out of them that's going to jeopardize the case.
All right, so I have a question, and this is the gang world versus the rap world, and they may intersect and overlap, I don't know. When it comes to a gang shooting, I can clearly understand no one coming forward.
Sure.
Because your family is at risk, you're at risk, and you could die. Is the same thing with the rap world where you're in danger?
You just sort of hit on it. The gang culture and the rap culture are intersected. In fact, some would say rap was born from gangs in the streets, and it was their form of expression. And there's a lot of connection. In the case that we highlighted before with the LA County Sheriff's Department, that was a case where this music producer, video producer, was working for both the Crips and the Bloods as a contractor, if you will. He was helping them. He was doing videos, and he was helping the other gang. And those gangs caught wind of it, and they seemed to think that it was a rival shooting because they didn't want this guy working with the other gang. So the gang world has a role in the rap world. You know, you look at the rap artists who have been killed over the years because of their affiliation with gangs. This one here, this is an interesting one because they think this was a case of, like you say, they know that someone close to this guy had something to do with it, whether they set him up or whether they pulled the trigger. They know someone close to this, Kevin Harris, had something to do with it. They also know that most likely it was somebody that was either jealous of his success because he's 21 years old, someone whom he disrespected in the form of like, you know, no, I don't want to work with you or thanks, but no thanks kind of stuff. And instead of saying, okay, great, well, if things change, instead of doing that, they just turn around and go up and shoot him. So they think it's something as simple as that. And this is the culture.
And I'm also assuming the higher the reward, the easier it is to get the information or someone to come forward. And does it go beyond, let's say, okay, $50,000 is out there and they're just on the cusp of doing this. Typically, would they just increase the reward as the FBI go forward and say, guys, if we come up with another $25,000, we think we're going to get the information?
I've never really heard it done that way. I think as the cases go on and they linger, sometimes they'll just beef it up because they want to just try it again. And after a few years go by, sometimes people that might be involved in the case or know someone who's involved in the case, they get older. They have kids. They get a family. They start to feel guilty about what happened. And a lot of times they feel out of guilt to come forward, cleanse their soul, if you will, because they have kids of their own. So it's really weird. But the second case, real quick, I'll touch on that we're doing tomorrow is Sherry Herrera. She was found in the desert March 30th, 1993, on the eastbound on-ramp of Hayfield Road, 50 miles east of Palm Springs on the 10 freeway. She was a known prostitute that was known to hang out in truck stops. And they found her body there. She'd been assaulted. And they're using forensic genealogy to track down who the suspect is. So that's tomorrow night.
All right. And that's going through the DNA and
backtracking it. Instead of using DNA to identify who the suspect is, they're using DNA and genealogy, forensic genealogy, to discover who the suspect might be, ethnicity, where they're from, you know, where they were born.
Science is phenomenal.
It is. It's fascinating. Yeah. It's good stuff.
All right, Steve. And then literally in 30 seconds, what else is on the menu that you're working on over the next several weeks? Do you have plans?
We're going to drop another big bombshell on the Metro. We got that working right now. I've got an investigation with the CHP. And then Golden Mike Awards are tomorrow night.
Oh, don't you get tired of those, getting those? Steve, he literally uses them as doorstops, hands them out as party favors, puts them in stockings for people.
Well, I'm going to tell you that I'm excited because your friend and mine, Jacob Gonzalez, will have won his first.
That's cool. All right, Steve, as always, thank you,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks, pal.